Hi everyone, and welcome once again to Ethics, Analytics, and the Duty of Care. I'll just get this PowerPoint set up here, which I forgot to do before the start of this, so I'll do that now. Sorry about that. I thought I was all set and ready to go, but of course I wasn't. Because that's what happens when you're doing stuff live sometimes, and when you're doing it by yourself and you don't always think of these things. And of course we're going to have a train go by too, just to make life fun. There we go. Approaches to ethics. I might trim the first few seconds off this video. If so, welcome to Ethics, Analytics, and the Duty of Care, the beginning of Module 5, which is Approaches to Ethics. I'm Stephen Downs, and I'm leading you through this course today. Now, what we're going to start off talking about when we talk about approaches to ethics is the question of the basis for statements about the ethics of learning analytics and AI. We make lots of statements. We say things like people's rights to privacy should be respected, or we need to balance the risks and benefits, etc., etc. We've gone through a whole number of these already. The different ethical principles, the different ethical values, the issues that have been raised. Excuse me. We've covered a lot of this stuff already. In this module, we're going to look at the deep and rich history of ethics to see if we can draw out what the basis of these ethical statements is, why we make them, what justifies them. So let's look at some of the language that's actually used in some of the papers that talk about ethics and analytics and AI. Here's one from K. Korn and Oppenheims, 10 years old, but it's still relevant. It says, "To satisfy expectations of the born digital / born social generations, there is a likely requirement to take on ethical considerations, which may run contrary to the sensibilities of previous generations, especially in respect of the trade-off between privacy and service." Excuse me one moment. Nothing like getting a frog in your throat just as you're doing a live video. So my take on their take is, really? Is that why we're doing it? To satisfy the expectations of born digital and born social generations? That doesn't really seem right to me. I don't really see that as being a reason to start looking into the ethics or even to change our positions on the ethics. It's not about satisfying expectations of a generation. How about this? Drew, 2016, saying, "People think that it would be irresponsible not to use data science in certain cases, and that we should not lag behind other countries." Again, what sort of reasoning is this? Do we draft our principles about AI and the ethics of AI based on what people think or whether or not we lag behind other countries? You know, this comparison between other countries is used to justify a lot of things. Whether we should develop a certain industry or adopt a certain policy. The idea that we're lagging behind suggests a moral superiority to the position those countries who are ahead are taking. But what does it mean to be ahead? Well, look at the Brookings Institute, which writes basically, "Whoever leads in artificial intelligence in 2030 will rule the world until 2100. So the idea here is what's right is ruling the world. Really? I'm not so sure about that. What about this? Voltaire's Candide might have said, "We're faced with the imperative to seek out the best of all possible worlds." This is one of those worlds where we do the trade-offs, the risks, the balances, and all of that. We have this requirement to ask, is this the best of all possible worlds. And Candide goes through a world where there's all kinds of violence and injury and just generally bad behavior and horrible conditions. And yet still comes to say, this is the best of all possible worlds. This is as good as it gets. And the reason why we have to put up with this bad stuff is so we can have this good stuff. Now, is that a reason for ethics? Is that a reason for artificial intelligence? I think these three approaches are kind of superficial. They're kind of superficial, not in the sense that they aren't good arguments, although I don't think they are good arguments, but they're kind of superficial in the sense that they don't actually address ethical questions at all. They're all fancy ways of changing the subject. You know, we go back, expectations, that's a different subject. Not lagging behind the others, that's a different subject. Best of all possible worlds, that too is a different subject. But what about what is right and what is wrong? These are the questions that ethics gets at. And these are the questions that we want an ethics of learning analytics and artificial intelligence in education to get at. Not whether it's popular or whether it rules the world, but whether it's right or wrong. But how do we determine that? Well, ethics has been a topic of interest, well, forever. Human interest in ethics goes back at least 3,000 years. I was going to put 3,500 years and it wouldn't have mattered. We go back to the Epic of Gilgamesh. We go back to the Iliad of Homer, the Icelandic Eddas, and we see an ethics with a set of values that suits strong leaders of small tribes, and we see that echoed throughout history. We see things like the Sumerian Farmer's Almanac and the Egyptians' instructions, which both advise farmers to leave some grain for poor gleaners. These are both examples from Wikipedia. So we do see a different sense of ethics. This study of what is the right way to live, what is the right way to be, what are the appropriate actions to take in different circumstances, in different conditions, probably is as old as human society itself. And in fact, we might argue that the very possibility of a society requires ethics. Or another way of putting it, ethics, the result of ethics, is the creation of human society. Once we started thinking about what does it mean to do right or wrong to each other, that's when we began to get along with each other. Ethics has a long history and association with religious beliefs. I was going to list a whole bunch of things. I could have gone looked at Sharia code from the Islamic tradition and then the law codes that follow from that. Or I could have looked at, say, the Ten Commandments or the guidance of Jesus in the Christian Bible. I could refer to the Analects of Confucius, or the guidance that Lao Tzu makes in the Tao Te Ching. There is a long history of ethics telling us what the right way to live is. At the same time, this association is waning. I say waning in a loose sense, not as a precise mathematical calculation. But, you know, we see in the chart here on the right-hand side whether belief in God is essential to morality, and we see in some societies, such as, say, the United States, Egypt, Indonesia, El Salvador, and Ghana, people believe it is. And yet in other societies, Canada, France, Israel, Australia, people believe it's not necessary to believe in God to be moral. There is a tradition of writing in this school. I reference Miguel Gulen's summary of Greg Epstein's book, Good Without God, and it follows in a long tradition of such books. Kai Nielsen, who taught at the University of Calgary while I studied there, has written Ethics Without God. J.L. Mackey is well known for his book, Ethics, Inventing Right and Wrong. So there is a sense in which ethics is associated with religion, but arguably it's not a necessary connection, at least from the perspective of this inquiry at this point in time. In Western traditions, and I emphasize Western, ethics begins with, as a philosophy, begins within the Greek tradition. And histories of ethics, such as at encyclopedia.com, which take a very Western perspective, talk about it beginning with Plato. Now, arguably, or not Plato, with Socrates. Arguably, there was discussion about that before. And again, I mentioned in a previous discussion the Law Codes of Solon, which predates any of these. But Socrates asks, what is justice? What is right? And we get answers like justice is the rule of the stronger, or man is the measure of all things. These are the sorts of answers that the sophists might give. And Socrates, you know, in basically devastating analyses, shows the difficulty in such simple views. It's a lot more difficult than that. The rule of the stronger can be unjust. Man might not be the measure of all things. How would we know? Plato comes up with what we might call the ideal form of the good. Something like triangles. We have the ideal form of the triangle. We have the ideal form of the good. And just like the triangle, we can know it by thinking about it. And just like the triangle, it's how we measure all other objects of knowledge. Aristotle is well known as being less ideally minded than Plato. He comes up with a theory, or he comes up with a complex approach to ethics, complex approaches to ethics, but we might summarize them if we had to, and we do, as something like the exercise of natural human facilities in accordance with virtue. So these are taken from that article on the history of ethics from encyclopedia.com, but you'll see similar statements expressed in pretty much every history of ethics as defined from the Greek tradition. Since the Enlightenment, arguably before, but certainly not long after, ethics has been associated with reason. The Enlightenment and humanism and a lot of the philosophy that we see associated with people like Descartes and Voltaire and Pascal with his famous wager, remove things like ethics from the domain of the well, I won't say supernatural, that's the wrong word, but from the domain of the ethereal to the domain of humans, to being something that we as humans, fallible as we are, can know and can apprehend. And this idea that ethics has been associated with reason has been with us since, and is probably the dominant approach to ethics today. Yes, we still see appeals to character and human nature. Yes, we still see appeals to religion and even ancient values. But all of these, even today, are generally couched within the form of the argument, the form of the rational inquiry, perhaps looking for evidence, certainly posing things like thought experiments, so that the reflective person can somehow think of and come to grasp, at least for themselves, an idea of what ethics must be. There's a strong relation in this rationalist tradition between belief and ethics, and in fact, the one feeds into the other. We have an ethics or a moral obligation to believe responsibly, and we have ethics that are founded on the basis of responsible belief. And you see how they feed back into each other. It was hard to express that without making it a tight little circle. But the argument is there, right? For example, false beliefs about physical or social facts, like, say, the side effects of vaccination, may lead us into poor habits of action. Or poor practices of belief formation, like, say, listening to fake news, may turn us into careless, credulous believers. And here's something that's especially relevant for today, although it was written in 1877. We have a moral responsibility, says Clifford, not to pollute the well of collective knowledge. Now, that can't be a direct quote, but it does come from Uribe's article, Believing Without Evidence is Always Morally Wrong. There's different ways of believing in There are different ways belief and ethics can interoperate, and I've depicted two here. On the left, the way reasoning, including ethical reasoning about, say, beliefs and desires, influences actions. On the right, however, we have what is normally called something like rationalization, where our actions are actually caused by our instincts, our norms, and our habit, but when we think about it, we are able to infer to what our beliefs or desires were, or perhaps are. This form of reasoning is known as abduction, or inference to the best explanation, and you can see that operating here. And although it's typical to say something like, you know, it's only a rationalization after the fact, it doesn't mean anything, it might be that, in fact, rationalization is rational if we're not trying to determine what our ethical beliefs are, but rather trying to explain what they are. Moss and Metcalf, looking at the question, ask whether ethics itself is too big a word, that maybe the concept of ethics just brings in too many things. I mean, we've already seen that it brings in religion and history and culture and calculation. That's an awful lot there. And then today we have a much more complex ethical picture, looking at things like compliance, legal risk, corporate values, and moral justice, and more, all sometimes described as ethics, and all sometimes working in parallel, as they say, sometimes coming into tension with each other. And they may have a point, although in the discussion at noon, I thought about this, talking with Mark, and thinking, you know, I don't think ethics is too big a word. I think there is a concept, it may be a loose concept, it may be a poorly defined folk concept, but there is a concept of ethics. There is a sense, maybe right and wrong aren't exactly the right words, maybe rational is the right word, maybe compliant is the right word, maybe moral is the right word, maybe justice is the right word, but something like that, that we can point to and we can describe and we can refer to with respect to our conduct in education, teaching and learning, with respect to artificial intelligence and analytics. There is some there. I don't think breaking it apart and hiding off sections that we won't talk about is really the answer. And in fact, if we are to come up with an answer, I think that we need a concept of ethics that is going to, at the very least, explain, if not give us insight in how to form, things like compliance, legal risk, corporate values, and moral justice, among others. Moss and Metcalf, look at the adjective ethical. And they look at the different senses of what we mean by ethical. For example, we might have ethical outcomes. They write that this might consist of a cloud service company declining a contract with an abusive government or agency, or equalizing error rates across protected classes in an automated hiring system. The outcome, in other words, is the result of the process. It's the non-discrimination that we see in our hiring. It's the non-compliance with unethical behaviors we see in some governments. It is presumably as well the pursuit of a positively defined good, such as the betterment of society, the provision of more rights and more capacities for people, however you're going to define it. Here we have a picture here that talks about organizational and citizenship behavior versus unethical pro-organizational behavior. That's pretty good indication of what we mean by moral or ethical outcomes. But of course, ethics is more than outcomes. There's ethical processes. And, you know, we can compare ethics in this sense to something like scientific method, where what's important isn't what comes out the other end. Now, presumably in science, we want what comes out the other end to be true, accurate, productive, effective, or whatever the different scientific values are. But what makes it so is the process that went into producing that output. And in science, we call that the scientific method. Now, we could talk for a long time about exactly what we mean by the scientific method, but it is generally agreed that there is one. And it is generally agreed that there is one because it produces good outcomes. I mean, after all, we're living in an age of technical and other wonders, technical and scientific wonders. We were able to develop a vaccine for COVID in a year. I mean, that's virtually miraculous, but it's a consequence of scientific method. Similarly, in the domain of ethics, a rigorously ethical process can look like some kind of messy, even unnecessary process, but the idea here is you follow the process and something good comes out the other end. What does that process mean? Well, there are many descriptions of ethical process, and that's part of the problem. This one here talks about knowing the facts, looking for the right people, knowing the applicable laws, being accountable towards stakeholders, noting the core values of the company, and being objective in decision making. Now, that would seem like a very odd statement of an ethical process to other people. And so it's not simply having a process that makes something ethical, but it's having an ethical process, which means something like a process, I guess, that would produce desirable ethical outcomes. Another way to look at this, and we talked quite a bit about this in the previous module, is ethical values. Now, here we have a description of values that describe states, humans, or any other being's desires, such as beauty, justice, wealth, and I add, are expressed as ethical principles. The little diagram there shows a bunch of them, right? Determination, respect, integrity, quality, culture, morality, trust, discipline, character, energetic, industry. Well, there's too many to name. I came up with a reasonably long list of values, but arguably there are many more. And then you have to take these values, instantiate them as principles capable of concrete action, and then figure out what to do when the principles conflict with each other, as they inevitably will. Another way of looking at ethics is to think in terms of ethical requirements, the checkbox system that we seem to have adopted as the norm for so many of our institutional and technological processes. for example, here we have an article from Nature telling us ethical requirements are requirements for AI systems derived from ethical principles or ethical codes or norms. So we have unique value, risk benefit, consent, traceability, privacy, and these all feed into an institutional or ethics review board approval process. Tick, 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 tick. Is that ethics? Is that what we mean by ethical? I don't think it is. I don't think any of these four accounts covers what we mean by ethics. Maybe another way of looking at it is to look at the different approaches to ethics. We're going to do a lot of that in this module. This here is a very quick sketch, and I'm not actually going to divide the approaches to ethics in exactly this way, but I wanted to highlight this from Velasquez because it does actually represent a fairly contemporary perspective on what the different approaches to ethics are. And the five approaches are as follows. The utilitarian approach, which is a consequentialist-based approach, based on something like creating the most good for the most people. There are different approaches of interpreting a consequentialist position on ethics, and we'll look at those in some of the next talks. Another approach is the rights-based approach, and we've seen quite a number of the ethical codes and statements on ethical principles adopt an explicitly rights-based approach to ethical issues in analytics and AI in learning and teaching. And there's a lot to be said for that approach. Certainly we would think that it's unethical to violate somebody's rights. We'll have to look at, though, how we identify what those rights are, what constitutes a violation of a right, and whether the domain of ethics is exhausted by a discussion of rights. And of course, somebody will always say, well, if you're going to talk about rights, you have to talk about responsibilities. Another approach is the fairness or justice approach. This derives, in current philosophy at least, from John Rawls' book, A Theory of Justice, which defines justice as fairness. And many ethical principles that we've looked at so far are based on this concept of fairness. Fairness itself is represented as an ethical value, and we talked about that. There's a history of this sort of approach, and I'm going to characterize that in this module under a more general heading of a contractarian or a social contract-based approach. And so we'll be looking not just at Rawls, but also at people like Hobbes, Locke, and Rousseau, and thinking about the different bases for and the different ways we could go about creating social contracts. Additionally, there's an approach based on the common good, which again makes us think of Rousseau, but it also makes us think of Mao. And it makes us think of communitarian-based ethics, where what's good and what's right is based as much on what is good and right for everybody as on what is good and right for oneself. And then finally, as mentioned earlier, there's the virtue approach, and I will talk about that. Virtue-based approaches may have begun with Aristotle, although certainly I think people have talked about that before Aristotle. And it's enjoying a modern renaissance, if you will. And there's quite a bit of discussion of character-based approaches to teaching and learning. And these character-based approaches to teaching and learning, I think, will inevitably seep into a discussion of the ethics of analytics and AI in learning. So like I say, I'm going to recast these five approaches. I want to bring in a more historical perspective, and I want to break out a bit from the fairly classic Western approach to ethics that these five approaches represent. Finally, we're going to look in this module at what is called meta-ethics, or as my old professor John Baker would say, meta-ethics. And I would say there's no R in meta-ethics. And here we're looking for, you know, we've got all of these ethical theories and ethical approaches. Here we're looking for the basis for ethical reasoning. How do we choose among them? How do we make decisions among them? How do we, if we want, balance them off? Or how do we assign priority to one approach over another? And this gets down to some of the really fundamental questions in both the historical and contemporary discussion of ethics. Questions like, does might make right? Our first inclination is to answer, no, it doesn't. And yet, if we look at, say, international diplomacy, it certainly seems that it does. And so we need to take that question seriously. Or how about the question of whether ethics describes duties? Can a fairly abstract, and it is abstract, concept such as ethics and moral reasoning create and impose duties on people? Can I say to you, and be justified in saying, you have a duty to give money to the poor, or you have a duty to rescue a drowning dog, or you have a duty to refrain from murdering people? Are ethics based on rights? We mentioned that before in the different ethical approaches, but here we flip around the question. Suppose we have rights, does that give us a theory of ethics? Suppose rights are foundational. On the other hand, suppose rights are not foundational, how then do rights and ethics relate to each other? Do ethics require agency? There's an old principle, ought implies can. That is to say, if it is a moral obligation to do something, then necessarily you need to be able to do it. And usually this is expressed in the converse. If you are not able to do something, then you do not have a moral obligation to do it. Well, that seems to make sense, but what do we mean when we say not able to do something? Because we hear this kind of argument a lot in contemporary society. We cannot stop using oil to power our society, therefore we have no ethical obligation to stop using oil or to move toward renewable energy sources, for example. And then finally, the big one that gets everybody, relativism versus universality. If there is an ethical principle, does it apply to everyone all the time? If there is a system of ethics, maybe a consequentialist system, maybe a rights-based system, does it apply to everyone all the time? After all, the United Nations didn't just call it the Declaration of Human Rights. They called it the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Conversely, what if ethics is different from one environment to another? In our discussion so far, and looking at the ethical codes in particular, we've seen that we can think of ethics as being very context-bound, bound to a specific profession, bound to a specific set of objectives or outcomes that we're trying to achieve. So maybe ethics is relative. And if it's relative by profession, maybe it's relative by culture. We saw that different societies view the role of God in ethics differently. Does that mean then that different societies can have consistently different sets of ethics? Or does it mean that some societies are basically unethical and other societies are ethical? And if so, how do you judge which ones? These are tough questions. These are the sorts of questions that we need to wrestle with. And I expressed this kind of badly in the initial discussion that we had at noon today, where I said something like, the reason for this course is that people haven't learned about ethics, haven't learned about analytics, and haven't learned about education. But what I mean by that isn't that people haven't been schooled by someone like me who will tell them about all of these things. What I mean by that is people haven't asked the questions. A lot of the discussion of ethics in artificial intelligence and analytics simply assumes, say, that privacy is a right and must be respected. But when we push that, and we must push that, what is the basis for such a statement? After all, privacy protects criminals as well as the innocent. And, you know, it seems like, well, of course, we should just balance this. But what makes a consequentialist approach, a technical approach of balancing it, the right approach? I mean, you wouldn't balance killing and not killing, would you? Or would you? Sometimes it seems that our society would. So those are the kinds of questions that need to be asked. And they need to be asked, and we need to think about some of the answers that are possible before coming up with pronouncements on what the ethics of analytics and AI in learning and teaching looks like. If you haven't asked the question, you're not in a position to provide the answer. I think that's obvious, but maybe it's not. So our study of ethical approaches in this module isn't about learning the different ethical approaches. I could care less whether people know the different ethical approaches. It's just that the different ethical approaches give us possible answers to some of these questions. And at some point in the process of reasoning about AI and analytics and ethics, we should consider these possible answers. Now, we don't have to remember them all. That would be silly. But we should consider them the way we might consider, you know, what route to take to New York City or whether to have chicken or beef for dinner. We're not going to memorize all the options, but, you know, if we don't consider the options, then we may spend a lifetime eating nothing but chicken and never trying beef. And that would be sad, unless you're a vegetarian, in which case that would be good. You know what I mean. So that's what we're up to in this module. Looking at the answers to some of these questions, both in terms of the ethical approaches and in terms of meta-ethics that people have come up with over the years. And where it will lead, I think, is for us to think about how to approach ethical reasoning generally. And I think it may change our approach to ethical reasoning. It certainly, in my case, it did. And we'll talk about that toward the end of this module, where we will ask, basically, what is the end of ethics? What are we up to here? And does this discussion ever end? So with that, I'm Stephen Downs, and I welcome you to Module 5, and the continuation of ethics, analytics, and the duty of care.